You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome back to the 750. I am your ORG Ochoa. He is your 75 two-time Super Bowl champion, College Football Hall of Famer, the one, the only, the debonair, Tony Casillas. TC, what up?
You know, it's I'm doing well. Glad to be here on this Tuesday. Man, last weekend was remarkable. PGA Championship.
Oh, my gosh.
Still kind of living off that with everything else that's going on in sports right now with some uncertainty, and we'll get to that. But all in all, it's been a great week, you know, here on Tuesday. I'm trying to channel my way through a little pain because, as you know, and some of our listeners, if they listen to our podcast, I had knee replacement surgery about a little over 2 months ago.
Yeah,
about 3 months ago. And, you know, you know how you're just going really, really good, you know, RJ, and everything's going, oh, man, this is awesome. I think I hit that proverbial wall this week, so, or last week. So I'm dealing with it. But other than that, it's always great to be with you here on the 750, brother.
Well, you've been fairly active, it seems. I mean, you've been Pelotoning, you've been jogging, you've been, you know, doing your walks and things like that. So, I mean, yeah. you've earned a day to kind of take a breath and a little bit of a moment. So hopefully you get rested up. I want to bring something up in a second, but you mentioned the PGA Championship. Have you ever hit a drive like Colin Morikawa did on 16 on Sunday?
Which drive was that?
That was the par four, the short par four that he put to 7 feet in the eagle.
No, I probably if it ricocheted off a tree, and I was really lucky. But yeah, you mentioned that hole too, and that's what I love about that tournament is that it's risk and reward. I mean, it was very difficult, and at 23 years old, has won the PGA Championship, so he's in good company. He's one of the youngest guys, along with Tiger Woods, the most notable one. But no, I have never. I've driven some greens, but no, not that accurate. And have a 7 foot putt for eagle.
Yeah,
and I think that's fun. I think we really like watching guys that can drive, you know, knock the hell of the ball and actually execute. And I do got to say, and I tweeted this out, and I put it on Instagram. Whenever JT had that moment with the
earlier on Sunday,
that was earlier that I think that was earlier in the round. But I thought that was good audio, along with watching guys hit bombs on 16.
Sure, Justin Thomas, PGA champion in his own right, missed a putt and was not pleased.
You got to be effing kidding me! And I think we all been there as our amateur.
Oh,
you know,
for sure.
Play golf, but maybe you're not like that. Maybe you don't use obscenities like I do. Maybe I'm just a bad influence. But we've all been there to hear it, the way they caught it like that. And that's not his first offense. I think JT has been mic'd before, and he kind of forgets about that. But I guess that's pretty cool.
He's super anti, he doesn't want to be mic'd up. I think for those reasons, he knows what he sounds like when he's out there. On a different sports note, Tony, we're talking on Tuesday. It is August 11th. Today is the 12-year anniversary of something. Do you know what off the top of your head? 12 years ago, so August 11th, 2008.
Oh, gosh. I mean, it's been a kind of a tough morning. I've been on the internet, but I have not. I mean, it's something I'll probably know about once you mention. So I'm going to say no, I do not know right now.
Well, I'm going to say that it is the greatest Olympic moment, at least in my lifetime. I don't know if you agree. Scott Lizak closing on the final leg of the relay, United States against France. Michael Phelps's 8 gold medals on the line. They had to have it. I will never in my life forget. I watched that. We were visiting my grandparents, and I watched that in my grandmother's bedroom. I ran to watch it by myself. That was unbelievable. Is it the greatest Olympic moment in your life?
Yeah, now that you mention that, because I think we just get all lost because of pandemic, and this summer we're supposed to have the, you know, the Summer Olympics, if I'm correct. I mean, 2020 has just been a really sucky year, so you kind of lose a, you know, side of what's actually supposed to be going on. But I think the most dramatic, when you look at the swimming and Michael Phelps and that whole, you know, him trying to win 500 gold medals, that was pretty remarkable. That was, you know, and I don't think anybody gets it engaged in swimming like we do during the Olympics, especially when it's Michael Phelps and just the, so. Yeah, I think that was a really, really amazing moment in Olympic Summer Olympic sports, is watching that.
There's 1 month.
12 years, though. God, that's...
Oh, dude, that's what I'm saying. That, see,
like... by too fast.
I didn't experience the Miracle on Ice, you know, live, so that's why I can't put that one in my...
I did, and that is an amazing moment in time. I mean, regardless of how old you are, being, you know, I mean, it just transcends, but that was amazing how that happened. But,
sure. And that the story of that is unique. Yeah. As far as U.S. Olympic history, I'd put the Miracle on Ice. I'd put Scott Lezak up there, and Kerry Strug and the Magnificent Seven in Atlanta in 1996, the women's gymnastics. That, I think those are up there. I mean, you could go Dream Team if you want. You know what I mean? But that was like, there's some, the Dream Team just demolished everybody. It was fun, but it wasn't like this, you know, comeback or anything, which makes the other stories a little bit more riveting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that you was 96. Was that the, is that when she's,
that was when she had the I don't know if it was ankle. Dislocated, but she had the bad ankle, and she went and still stuck the landing and the Magnificent Seven won. Yeah, it was her. Was it Dominique Dawes? Uh-huh. And I think that was after Mary Lou Retton.
Mary Lou Retton was in 84, I think. I think maybe about whereabouts. But yeah, I think that. You know, I think so, you know, with the Olympics, Summer Olympics especially, you don't really think about those sports until they come around. I mean, unless you're really enthusiast as far as following those type of events. But, you know, that's the thing you miss about it, because there's just moments that you just can't duplicate, because it's so raw and natural, and they're working all their lives to try to, you know, come to that moment, and to really actually, where it's so dramatic, it's pretty cool.
Agreed. So, Tony, again, we're talking on Tuesday, and I want to be very clear. We're talking a little bit after 9 a.m. Central Time, because this story is seemingly changing. Well, basically everything in our lives is changing every hour. But there are some people, Tony, that believe that college football will be canceled, suspended, postponed, whatever word you want to put on it, today, on Tuesday. There are some people that believe that it could happen. There's some people that believe it could happen only to the Big Ten, only to the Pac-12, that the SEC is going to drag football, you know, through this, because that's the SEC way. But so again, if you're listening later, it's very possible that something changed or that nothing changed. But that is the expectation is a weird way to put it, but that's what a lot of reports seem to indicate. Obviously you're incredibly bummed. You are literally one of the greatest college football players to ever live. What does that do to you?
Well, I think there's when I first thought about it, and they had this emergency meeting, I believe that was on Sunday, and then Sunday night, and then I heard the rumors, and everyone has opinion, everyone has a source, everyone has their, you know, their take on it. You know, my take is all. I thought about athletes being deprived. I thought about the reason why they're doing this is because it comes down to them losing money. And the five powers, you look at all the five conferences, the five you know, food groups that make the decision for everyone else, and really the players do not have a voice. And you know, here's the thing, RJ, and we can't speculate, because we don't, that's our ammo. No one can speculate anything, but you know what? You can anticipate this,
right?
You've been having all these thorough testing. Kids have been back on campus. They're in a bubble. They're doing everything that they need to do. And these aren't professional athletes. Let me step back and rephrase that. The NCAA views them as a professional entity, but when it comes down to when the athletes, you know, them
they're
saying
amateurs.
Yeah, they're amateurs, but they're capitalized and monetized and off them. And for them not to have a say-so in this, because, you know, I think as an athlete, you know, there's so much on the line. I mean, the all fall sports would be, you know, their plan or whatever would be to move it to the spring, which is totally, you know, to me is I don't think the reality of that being able to happen and guys still playing, you cannot do that. I mean, that's my take on it. But just the fact that not having, you know, you couldn't have made this decision 2 weeks ago or a month ago, knowing that this would happen, but coming down to the thing to think, okay, well, maybe we move it in the spring. Maybe we, you know, if we lose $40 million by not selling, you know, having fans to watch the game, maybe we can recoup that in the spring, which I think is totally just unorganized. There's no leadership. And as I mentioned, you know, you're deprived of your senior year. You're deprived of being able to do all the work of playing college football. And the most important thing to me is if you're a high rated college athlete that's getting drafted in the National Football League, you know, it kind of puts you between a rock and a hard place. But those guys that really need this year to really, you know, extend their talent to the National Football League where they can, you know, rate their play, they're not going to have that year. And I think the most important thing, I think it's a long-winded answer, is that they'll never be able to recapture this year, those guys. And regardless of what they're – and you got five commissioners, athletic directors, people making those decisions for people – that have no say so whatsoever.
It is, I mean, you know this. I mean, you've been through it at the highest possible level. There are, you said there's a lack of leadership. It's amazing that there could be this level of unorganization from a leadership standpoint, given how many people have titles, right? Like how every university has a president and an AD, and obviously their coaches are involved, and every, you know, conference has, you know what I'm saying? Like there are probably like 500 people that are technically points of leadership here, and they have all collectively failed.
Yes.
You're right that, you know, look, I think we would all agree that none of us thought we would be here back in March when Rudy Gobert tested positive. I think we weren't even thinking about August or September or whatever. And that's a whole different issue. And I know that inspires a lot of debate among a lot of people. But it does feel like they, you know, like in college, do you ever get like, hey, Tony, you know, it's the first day of the semester, and on the last day of the semester, you're going to have this big paper due, so you can work on it however much you want between now and then, but it's going to be due the final day of the semester, and you just waited. The whole semester, you know what I mean? And the night before it was, that's what they did here. They waited.
Yeah. Not that I ever did that when I was in college.
But, you know.
That's 6 months and no.
I saw, so I went to Texas A&M. Who, by the way, beat Oklahoma in Johnny Manziel's 2012 season. No big deal. Greatest season of our lives. That's all we have at A&M, yeah, Tony.
I think the last time Oklahoma played at A&M, I think the score was like 70-0 in the first half.
Anyway, Tony, again, look, at A&M, all we have.
But I did watch the Longhorn Network. I shouldn't, you know, I dropped my Sooner Man card, but I'm watching. I don't know if you watched it. They showed the I think it was the A&M and the Texas game. I think it was 19. Was it 90s? I'm trying to think of what year it was. Dat Wynn was still playing, and I believe Ricky Williams is still playing. But anyway,
Dat Wynn, the Wrecking Crew, baby.
But anyway, it's back to the regular schedule program.
So I saw a photo. Some A&M student, current student, took a photo of I guess this like poster that was outside of a classroom. And it looked kind of like, you know, when you go to the movies, or when we used to go to the movies, and you pick your seats. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know how it has that little graph or whatever,
chart, and you click on,
and you choose the seats you want. It kind of looked like that, but it was color coded. There were like three different colors, and so like the colors denoted on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, certain seats were open. And on Tuesdays, and that was in certain times. So like on Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, the classes at 8:10 can only sit in certain seats. On Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, the classes at, you know, 10:20 can only sit in certain seats. And then on Tuesdays and Thursdays, the classes at 8:50 can only sit in certain seats. You know what I'm saying? So like you've got to do this like incredible matrix search just to go to class. And even something, this is a very, very, very small example. even something that minute took a conversation, right? Like two people had to sit down and say, well, we can do this. We can come up with this chart, et cetera. And it feels like the NCAA didn't do any of that until the last possible second. And now they're trying to figure out all of this. And I feel so badly for the players, and they have a point. I mean, you can argue that college football has been in football is the face of college sports, obviously, has been kind of leading to this path where, you know, at a certain point, you know, the NCAA was going to be forced to face the idea of paying players to some degree. The pandemic has kind of accelerated that conversation in a dramatic way, because the true reason why they can't force them to play is because they don't pay them. I mean, it's an irony on top of ironies, but this is an organization in the NCAA that is just kind of fine. They would almost rather swallow this year's loss than admit that they're not amateurs. You know what I mean?
Well, I think this is very imperative that the players take a stand, and what the coaches, whoever it may be, against the NCAA, hold them accountable. I mean, could be a really monumental movement for the players, considering if they say, look, we want to play. We've done everything, the protocol that you asked us to do, test 300 times during, you know, when we went back on campus to start getting acclimated and get inside the bubble. I think this is imperative they make a stand and tell the NCAA, look, and the NCAA, I think, are really aware of this, because I think the power can shift, because I think if you stay together, and the possibility of having an association and really just having someone, you know, speak on their behalf. Right. I think this is very important that they hold their ground. And the NCAA looks really stupid now, because all of a sudden, you know, all these guys are having, you know, they're having all these meetings, emergency meetings, because they're getting this, you know, this feedback. They're getting this pushback from the players. And so it really makes them look really, as you mentioned, unorganized, but not really have any idea or any organization on making a decision. So I think it's important the players take a stand and just hold the ground.
Doesn't it feel like the cancellation of the NCAA tournament was 5 years ago?
Yeah.
I mean,
it does.
It's just nuts. I mean, it really, really, I mean, I will be bummed if there's just conference only schedules. And I mean, that, you know, I'm not saying I don't want that, but, you know, we're already dealing.
But I do understand, RJ, I guess they're, and they should address this a month ago, the uncertainty of you know, we talked about this a month ago about how we felt about percentage if there was or weren't going to be a season. You know, why don't they do their due diligence? Won't they make a decision, you know, 30 days ago, or even some type of, you know, let the players know, look, you know, there may be a possibility we don't play. And, you know, where they don't get to this point. And really, it's perplexing to think that they really, really would come to this time and make a decision to whether they're going to play or not.
The moment that Rudy Gobert tested positive, every professional, semi-professional, amateur level, if you want to be technical with the NCAA sports organization, should have sat down and said, okay, we have no idea what the next however long is going to look like. What is, if we are in the worst case scenario, what is our plan? And it feels like the NCAA didn't do a great job of that. And I know people suggest bubbles and look at the NBA and the NHL and things like that. That's just impossible. I mean, it's impossible with the number of people associated with one college football team, let alone an entire conference, let alone all of Division I football, or not even just Division I.
I lost my train of thought, but I was going to bring up the point that, I did a call-in show yesterday, did a segment with the OU Network, and James L. does a tremendous job. He's been on there forever. And, you know, we started talking about, you know, the uncertainty, whether they're going to play or not. Well, at Oklahoma, they've had two of their players injured prior to, you know, them starting practice and everything. And so Lincoln Riley's big concern is, like, we're supposed to scrimmage this weekend. Mm-hmm. Why would I put my players at jeopardy to go out there and scrimmage, knowing that there may not be a football season?
No, totally.
So all of a sudden there's so much, you know, there's this uncertainty and decision-making, you know, whether or not, and it affects people, you know, how to plan their schedule and how to plan to move ahead in the season.
I was trying to explain to my mom, you know, because she's like, RJ, what's going on, you know, sports, explain, you know, and I just, you know, I think this is the best example. I mean, there are a million examples, but one of them is if you are at all wondering how a lack of a college football season can impact somebody, how many people do you know, Tony, that knew who Joe Burrow was a year ago? I mean, outside of your deep LSU fans,
people that know his story, not a whole lot.
And so, I mean, that, you know, last season, obviously, he had literally one of the greatest college football seasons of all time. And, you know, his life is significantly different because of the season he had. And, you know, you think about the stories and the lives that will forever be altered if there's no college football season. I mean, it's just devastating. My last thing before we move on, Tony, we did play percentages. And again, it's now 9:26 a.m. Central Time at this exact moment for anyone listening on Tuesday, August 11th. What is your percentage optimism that college football happens? Because I'm at 1%.
Well, I'm going to go with the notion that the players are going to make a stand and they're going to get pressure. You know, the five conferences, power conferences, the athletic NCAA to play the season. So I was at 80% a month ago,
and 80% that it wasn't going to happen. Play,
that there wasn't going to happen.
Okay,
I just didn't think. But then I, you know, I pushed forward because you know you just don't know.
Sure,
it's like the moving parts. Now I think I'm a little bit more 60-40 that they will play.
Oh, so you're,
or they won't play. I'm sorry, 40% that they will play.
So you're
just based on that. I think that these idiots, and I shouldn't say idiots. That's not. I mean, just. You know, it's amazing that you have people that are educated, that have been doing this forever, and they make decisions like this. And look, I understand to a certain point, because when the mass of people, my kids are going to college, my daughter went to Arkansas last weekend, moved into an apartment, my son taking him this weekend to go to OU. And I understand when all these kids get back on campus, there's probably going to be some people test positive for COVID-19. So if they would have took that approach, maybe 3 weeks ago, RJ, these athletic directors in the NCAA, they think that when the masses come back on campus, because when you're 18 and 19 years old, you're subjected to taking online courses, right? Because they're not going to have, my son has four online courses and one discussion group with 10 kids. And so when they go back to campus, they're not going to stay in the room. You think they're not going to party? So I understand that there's a plethora of things that are going to happen. But yeah, I feel, believe it or not, I feel better about there being a season, that being 40%, and it not happening, that being 60%.
Interesting. Of the Power Five conferences, which one is your least favorite?
Big Ten.
Really? Just this week? Or?
No. You know what? I really not going to cast stones. It's a tough decision. I just think, you know, I think I'm more upset with the governing body, the NCAA,
sure,
whoever makes a decision. I mean, it's a tough decision, and I understand. But if they just come out and say, look, we don't want to lose $40 million because we can't put people in the stands. I mean, I think that people, they're very transparent now. Don't you think the NCAA is very transparent, more than they've ever been, because of what they stand for? They stand for dollar signs.
I mean –
Fairness to the amateur athlete.
It feels like so much of our world is more transparent now than they were 6 months ago. But I mean, I don't know. I'm not confident personally, but I hope you're right.
So what is your feeling? What is your percentage of them having a season?
I'm at 1% confidence.
1%.
Because to me, what this sounds like, I applaud the players for, I hesitate to use the word unionizing, but unionizing in the sense, at the very least, that they've corralled each other and are working towards this as one. That's the best way. There's power in collective bargaining, and they are doing that the right way. They've got the right influence in that regard.
It puts the coaches in a tough position, because the coaches are getting information. And I guess they're getting information, or, you know, players can read social media, but there's not really enough information to give them which direction they're going.
Well, and it's hard for the
coaches.
It's hard for the coaches too, because if the coaches don't support the idea of, you know, unionizing or whatever. Not to dismiss that idea, but then, you know, I mean, everything, as you know, in college football boils down to one thing, and it's recruiting. That's, I mean, everything, you know, all the flow charts come back to recruiting. And if a college football head coach, pick whoever you want, doesn't support that, then all of a sudden, whenever football does come back, whether it's in 2020, 2021, they are hurting their future chances.
They'll remember that. A lot of people, and there's not amnesia when that happens. So it's a kind of a slippery slope. And it's like a coach in the National Football League. You know, they got to support the owner. And just like there's not a whole lot of head coaches will like step up and refute and disagree with the athletic director and the university because they're the ones that are writing their checks.
Well, so I think that as grand of an effort as the players are making, and I think that they're going above and beyond, I think the NCAA has decided, and by NCAA, I mean the powers that be, they've decided that it is financially in their best interest for this season to not happen. That sucks. That's really selfish. That's very greedy. You can put it a number of ways, but I think that they have decided that. And, you know,
but see, wouldn't you have more respect if they just come out and say it?
I would. I totally would.
I mean, I understand it. Just don't let us speculate. We know.
No,
we know the players. We understand that. But be accountable. Be the bigger body in this whole decision making and admit that, because you're not doing a very good job. All you're doing is tainting your really bad reputation right now is the inability to make decisions.
I agree with you. But I think that they, you know, the powers that be, I think they look at their arbitrary possessions, right? They look at, man, my reputation, that's tainted. So yeah, that's hurt, right? That's hindered. Okay. And they look at their pile of cash and they're saying, well, this might be tainted, but it's just as valuable as it was before. And I think that, you know, like I said, everything in college football boils down to recruiting. On the upper level, everything boils down to how much money can it make. And I think that they have decided it is. I mean, we're talking, how much money does college football generate a year? Like $4 billion. I really believe that they would rather swallow that on one year, because they believe the loss would be greater if they acknowledge that these are semi-professional athletes and therefore had to pay them over the course of the rest of time, which is a really, really, really unfortunate thing. But the perhaps more unfortunate thing is they can act this way, Tony, and next fall, you and I will be glued to the TVs watching A&M and Oklahoma play because we love college football.
We'll forget about this. But one thing before we move on, because it is Blogging the Boys, and we got some Cowboy content, but I mean, we have to address this. But you know, if you have kids that go back to college, and you know, at A&M, your experience is going to college and going to College Station and watching Kyle Field,
totally,
and watching the games. And so now, not only deprive the student athletes, the athletes, but how about the you know, my son and my daughter? They're going back to that aren't going to be able to experience that because of this decision making. And not even the fact that they may not be able to go to the game. They were offered season tickets, but the fact that they're not going to be able to experience that. I mean, there's a lot of people involved. I mean, there's a lot of jobs. It's a lot of people it affects, the whole experience. And to, you know, have this group of people all of a sudden make a decision because, you know, they were apprehensive and they couldn't decide a month ago is really, really sad.
You're right. I mean, so many economies. Like I went to Texas A&M. College Station is a really, really, really small town that lives off of the university. I've never been to Norman, but I understand it's not necessarily a metropolis.
But it's a college. It's a college making town.
Not every school is USC that's in LA. You know what I mean, or whatever. Yeah. I mean, I think about, and this is the last thing I'll say. There's a great video that the Mississippi State Athletic Department put out when Dak Prescott got drafted by the Cowboys. And it's this video of all these Mississippi State fans thanking him and saying, you know, how much he meant to them, et cetera. And it's that impact, right? Like, those are the people, it's that community of, in this case, Starkville or whatever, that is going to be impacted by this. And I don't know, man. It won't, but the NFL will absolutely play on Saturdays this fall. So, and you know, I was listening to a different.
They may play on Friday. They may play on Wednesday. Yeah. They may play.
No,
they may take advantage of
people. People will think you're joking or semi-joking. That's the truth. Like, the NFL will. I mean, they'll look at this, and the I don't say scary thing, but the NFL will look at what they do on Saturdays if they play on Saturdays regularly this fall, and they won't next year say, "Oh, college football's back. Oh yeah, we're not going to play on Saturdays anymore." That they are. This is. There's a lot to figure out here.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
On the subject, not really of college football, Tony, but when you picked your least favorite conference, I thought you might say the ACC, just because of Michael Irvin and the Hurricanes. But Michael Irvin, your boy, was on NFL Network. He's back doing the old analyst thing. He was on there on Monday, and he was asked about one of the other greatest Sooners of all time, because you're one yourself, in CeeDee Lamb. And obviously, a lot of people are excited that CeeDee Lamb is now a member of the Dallas Cowboys. And Michael Irvin compared him. Let's play the clip. What Michael Irvin had to say about CeeDee Lamb joining the Cowboys.
But let me just say this, because it would not be supercilious of me to make this statement. With what the Dallas Cowboys did in the 2020 NFL draft by adding CeeDee Lamb to the number one offense in the National Football League, what Will McClay did, what Jerry Jones, those guys, Mike McCarthy did, by adding this guy, CeeDee Lamb, is akin, almost tantamount to Kevin Durant being added to a 73-win Warriors team. Coach, stop asking in my ear what I said. I said supercilious. That means it wouldn't be arrogant or out of hand for me to say it. That's what that means. I'm giving it to you. I hear you in my ear gate asking other people. I don't mind educating the people. This is why I am back. I'm going to educate you, and that is not being arrogant to say adding him is like Kevin Durant being added to that Warriors team, especially offensively. They were already great offensively, and they got one of the best players and one of the best young talents at wide receiver in the National Football League. It is crazy what the Dallas Cowboys have an opportunity to do. And this is the last thing I will put on this. I know if I'm in that locker room, I love that Amari Cooper said everybody gets 1,000 yards. Hey, listen, I ain't mature that fast. I did not mature that fast. You could have never got me to say that. I was going to tell you those guys can have what I leave on the table. That's the crumb that they will eat. But I love that Amari Cooper went right out there. All of them can go and get 1,000 yards in this new NFL, and this offense will take off. That defense will have to step up and show up for the Cowboys, and I believe they can.
Okay, so Michael Irvin thinks that CeeDee Lamb joining the Cowboys is like Kevin Durant joining the Golden State Warriors. That was 4 years ago that happened, Tony. Your first thoughts?
Wow, I think that I love Michael, and he's animated, and he'll give us something to talk about. But I think that's coming from two different perspectives on my point. First of all, you know, Kevin Durant is one of the best players in the NBA that's ever played the game.
Yeah, and CeeDee, no disrespect to CeeDee Lamb, but he's...
No, I'm not. And I'm no respect, I would think, Neil Tendon. But, CeeDee Lamb is he's got a lot of upside. He's a lot of potential. And then I think everyone is hoping that, comes to fruition. And, he's an unproven commodity right now in the National Football League. And look, the guy's going to be amazing. So I don't understand. I mean, you look at Kevin Durant and what – he's such a great scorer of all time, right? And you take him already in that climate where they have Klay Thompson, they have, Steph Curry. I mean, they have, Draymond Green. I mean, it has so much depth in that franchise. You add KD, who can score all over the place, at will. He doesn't have anybody. I mean, there's not enough people to cover him. So I think his – theory, Michael's theory is thinking, okay, well, they have Amari Cooper, they have Michael Gallup, they have now CeeDee Lamb. Who's going to cover CeeDee Lamb?
Sure.
And, if Amari Cooper's right and he says that each of those wide receivers is going to have 1,000 yards, I mean, hell. I mean, I may buy into that. I may, buy that, I may buy that stock today. But right now, I mean, for him to say that he's going to mean that much to this offense – in a system that's a new system, Mike McCarthy system. I couldn't disagree with him more.
Well, it sounds silly because the Warriors that Kevin Durant joined had just literally won more games in the regular season than any NBA team ever had. Granted, they lost, they blew a 3-1 lead, everybody knows, to the Cavs in the finals. But, so you're talking about, to your point, you're adding, what was at the time and what will probably still be when KD comes back, one of the greatest players in the NBA, one of the greatest scorers, to literally one of the greatest offenses that has ever lived, And so I kind of get where Mike is coming from, right? Like, I get it, right? Like, you're talking about adding more offense to more offense. It's just, I think you lose people when you bring up, because, again, the fact is the Cowboys missed the playoffs last year. You know what I mean? Like, it's a weird way to put it.
Right. And to the point about how great the Golden State Warriors, I mean, the fact that you add KD, it wasn't fair because there was not enough bodies to cover
right. Their
scores. I mean, they had so many four bona fide scores, and now you have an offense that, again, it's a new offense. And adding that, and also, I think Michael should know this more than anything, the NFL is not like the NBA. I mean, there is guys that will jack. I mean, a guy can take 15, you can take 20, 30 shots. The guy that has a hot hand is going to make, mm-hmm. It's going to knock the three-pointers down. And I just think it's very hard to allocate because if you're talking about putting up numbers like KD is, I mean, you got to have at least 10 or 11 touches,
right. Per
game. And there's not enough catches around to go between Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, and someone like CeeDee Lamb. And for Michael Irvin to think that he could be – first of all, he wouldn't be able to coexist in a system where he only got to touch the ball less than KD.
So,
okay? I call bull on that. So, I mean, there's no way that would happen.
My favorite part of the Irvin clip that we played – is he talks about how he says, I did not mature as fast as Amari Cooper did. He says, he said that his mentality was, Alvin Harper, whoever, you can have the crumbs that I leave on the table. we're not all going for 1,000 yards. But granted, this was a different era in the NFL. I brought this up last week, Tony, when this comment was made by Amari, to have every one of them hit 1,000 yards, it's more than just how talented they are. It depends on the games. You know what I'm saying? Like, the right things have to happen for that. They have to be in every game. You know what I mean? Like, if they're blowing people out or whatever. I mean, if they're barely winning games or, you get what I'm saying? Like, you can't just plan on having 3,000-yard receivers because certain things have to work out that you can't control, if that makes sense.
Right. I think it'd be a little tongue in cheek because, I mean, everyone says, oh, yeah, we're all three of us are going to have 1,000 yards rushing, or excuse me, receiving. But then you got to throw the rushing in with Zeke and, you know, the type of offense. And I think that's the really exciting thing about seeing this new offense under Mike McCarthy, because, you know, we saw he likes to run the football. I mean, you saw when he had a good running back, you know, he liked to have some balance in when he was in Green Bay. So they're going to run the ball. But I mean, this makes great conversation.
Oh, and it does. Yeah.
The fact that, you know, Michael, I mean, was, and I say this in a, I don't know, in a friendly way. I mean, he was the most selfish player. I mean, that doesn't sound right. It's kind of hard to.
That's fair though. Like that's a good quality.
In a good way, he was a very selfish guy because he wanted the ball. And so now, you know, maybe he sees the transition and the change in the offenses. But still, to be able to get the ball that many times, I mean, you're gonna have to put up some big numbers. I mean, you know, Dak had almost over 5,000 yards throwing last year, correct?
He was very close to 5,000, yeah.
So if you throw in three receivers with 1,000 yards and you say, okay, well, maybe, you know, Zeke's going to have 1,500 yards rushing. I mean, those would be some monster, monster numbers for this offense. And to the point we just said, hopefully they're winning games and not having to come from behind during this whole pandemic season.
No, it's like – it's kind of like like, you know how sometimes when you're looking at a house, it might be a certain square footage, and you want that, right? Like the square, you know, it's, man, that's a really great square footage. But some rooms are bigger than others. You're like, well, I don't need this room to be that big. You know, I would rather this square footage be over here, whatever. That's what I'm saying. Like, if Dak throws for, I don't know, 4,200 yards next season, whatever, it's hard to say 1,000 are going to go to CD, 1,000 are going to go, you know what I mean? Like, it just it doesn't work out that way necessarily. I do want to say, you mentioned Irvin being, you know, I know you're, you know, selfish is a heavy word. People take that the wrong way. But one of the greatest plays that happened in y'all's era of Cowboys was because he was selfish. And he's told that story a million times. The 92 NFC Championship game, he took Alvin Harper's spot on 896 F flat, and sure enough, that ball goes to Alvin Harper. And that all happened because he wanted the ball. And so that's a cool story.
He was pissed off always on the sidelines, but they were able to, you know, deal with his emotion. But, you know, he wanted the damn balls. And so, to the point, yeah, I mean, he – and also, they only had one other receiver that was really – that complimented, you know, Michael, and that was Alvin Harper. You know, Kevin Williams, I mean, there was only, there was situational guys, but, you know, you're talking about three receivers that are really could be number one, Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, and Michael Gallup. So it's going to be interesting to see what type of input he has.
My last thing, Tony, I mentioned this on a different show on our feed, but do you know I'll tell you this. The Cowboys have recently had three pass catchers go over 900 yards. So each of them had over 900, but not quite 1,000. Can you guess when that was? It was recently, somewhat recently.
Was it 2016?
It was a little bit before then. I'll give you one more.
Oh, okay, 2014.
2012. Can you guess the three pass catchers?
Oh, gosh.
That all had at least 900 yards receiving.
Dez Bryant.
That's one of the three.
Jason Witten.
That's another three. You're missing one.
Terrence Williams.
No, that was the year before they drafted him.
Gosh, he was. Man.
If you don't get it, and I tell you, you're gonna be so upset with yourself.
When Miles Austin retired.
It was Miles Austin.
Man. God, it's been a long time ago,
dude.
8 years ago.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. So we'll see, Tony, if when we talk next week, if college football exists.
I'm gonna go to Mass right now and do some Hail Marys.
Call Roger Staubach and get everybody together, and then afterwards set up a game between Oklahoma and the Navy, and you know, we'll be all good.
Just tweet that out. That'd be great.
It would.
Praying for some Hail Marys and have that play.
We'll see what happens. We're gonna get some practices this week for the Cowboys, so we'll have some stuff to dive into next week.
Does it really seem like the season's a month away?
A little bit.
I mean, there hasn't been really any football played. It's all just been this process. But
I love, you know, NFL media, and I love the coverage of the NFL. And so, yeah. So something that is also like preventing me from totally feeling that way is not seeing all the reporters at camp, you know, like in the NFL Network or ESPN polos, you know what I mean? Like that's
to me, it doesn't seem like it's really because we don't have that coverage.
Right.
So we're kind of a little desensitized by everything, but
well,
nevertheless, let's keep our fingers crossed. You know, what's the first Kansas City and the Houston Texans will be the first game. So
that is 30 days from today. Scheduled to be played 30 days from today. So, yeah. Well, everybody have a good week. We'll
get straight, RJ, too.
We'll get into some more stuff next Tuesday. We love you all. As always, this was
Stay the safe.
750.